The Biodome, a pure self-contained environment where five scientists are about to be sealed off from every conceivable form of contamination except one.
Well, check out that mall, man.
Our dream is finally at hand.
What kind of mall is this?
Get them out of here!
The doors are sealed for 1 year.
We're stuck here.
That's right.
12 months?
Yes.
52 weeks?
Yes.
385 days?
Now, the whole world is watching as Bud and Doyle are separated from their loved ones. Learn about endangered species.
They're the rarest Lepidoptera in the world.
Experience nature firsthand. And become world-renowned protectors of the planet.
Purple sticky punch, or hemp, is an excellent source of photosynthesis.
Just because we're stuck in a bubble doesn't mean we can't cause any trouble.
On three! Three!
This winter,
welcome to paradise!
Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin,
trick or treat,
are doing whatever it takes.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
To put the mental back in environmental.
Well, could you at least make it taste like chicken? Otherwise, I'm gonna shrivel up like a supermodel. I am so fat. Nobody likes me.
Beautiful.
People didn't like me in high school.
Biodome.
Iron Man, does whatever an Iron Man.
Hold it. That's Spider-Man.
Come on, what do you think? You're some rocket scientist?
Yes.
Sorry. Hello!
Hey!
Pick me up with a little juice. I feel like a duck-billed platypus. Did check out the knots. It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Let's go, Tybalt! Great adventures await!
This is Dystopian Dance Party. We are talking about Pauly Shore now and into the foreseeable future. Will we ever stop talking about Pauly Shore? This week we're talking about Biodome. My name is Callie.
My name is Zach.
That's all.
As you can tell, I was like waiting for the next.
I know. I was trying to think of something, and I was like, "Nope, that's all I got." I said everything I needed to say.
We did a really tight minisode, and now we're going to do a really sloppy full episode because you know the important thing is to nail the minisode. Like that's the one everybody listens to.
Honestly, we're giving this the quality that it deserves. We're giving it the same amount of quality that I feel like the creators of Biodome gave the film.
100%. Yeah. Although I'm gonna show my hand a little bit, Biodome was not my least favorite movie that we've watched so far.
It was one of my favorites, and it was what I was most looking forward to.
I think it's in the top, if not in the top 50%, definitely in like the top, I don't know, 2/3. But let me back up and put some caveats on that. I know it's not a good movie. You know, like that is that's a given for anything that we talk about in this series. Like we're not out here trying to say that these are put Biodome in the Criterion Collection.
I am, but
there's something about it that is so perfectly stupid that it becomes. It's like the platonic ideal of a stupid movie. You have to respect how purely stupid it is.
Well, it literally is like a precursor to Dude, Where's My Car? It right. has the exact same main male characters who have like more successful and like politically engaged and interesting girlfriends, but they're just complete idiots and bums who don't know why they're interested in them. They don't seem to have jobs or anything, but they live in a house together. Like,
yeah, it's really something. So we're going to sort of shit on the movie because it's not a good movie. And there's parts of it that are, the whole thing is incredibly stupid. But it's like, it's so stupid that it goes all the way back around to being brilliant in my professional estimation.
In a way that I don't think was achievable with Jury Duty. Like, I also enjoyed Jury Duty, but I feel like Biodome is a better movie.
I feel like, yeah. So, Jury Duty was like a fun piece of entertainment. I would make the case for Biodome being art of a kind, outsider art. Like it accidentally is a work of art. So let's see if that will hold up to any scrutiny at all. I didn't do any research. I'm pretty much like, we tried to like have copious notes and cite sources and all that. And we did that at the beginning. And at this point it's like, I'm going to watch these fucking movies and that's all you can ask of me. So, but watch the movies and have Wikipedia open. But just some quick background. So this is straight from Wikipedia. It grossed $13 million at the box office in North America. And that was from an $8.5 million budget. So this movie made money. So congratulations, Polly. It did turn a profit. It was panned by critics, gaining a record low score of 1 out of 100 on Metacritic. And it is often considered to be one of the worst films ever made. It has a 1 of 100 on Metacritic on Rotten Tomatoes. It has an approval rating of 4% based on 27 reviews. And the Rotten Tomatoes score, the description says, Budd, Pauly Shore, and Doyle, Stephen Baldwin, get simultaneously dumped by their eco-conscious girlfriends, Monique, Joey Lauren Adams, and Jen Teresa Hill in the middle of the desert. Wow, this is more, I feel like this is a longer Rotten Tomatoes summary than most movies.
Well, you need to understand the full part right. of the movie to really appreciate it.
Right. I'm honestly not going to read this anymore because it's not so much a summary of critical reactions as it is a summary of the movie. Somebody at Rotten Tomatoes didn't get the memo about what this is supposed to be, and they just summarized the movie. Maybe they're like, well, this is why it has a 4%. Just read the plot.
Can we just really quickly talk about the fact that their names are Budd and Doyle?
Yeah. So, Callie, you texted me about, because you've seen this movie once before, and then you also watched it earlier than me. And you texted me that, and I was, and my first reaction was honestly, because again, in this series, we've encountered a character named Bones. So in the field of Pauly Shore protagonist names, Bones Conway. Bones Conway. So in the world of Pauly Shore protagonist names, Budd, what is it? Budd.
It's Budd McIntosh.
Budd McIntosh. But his nickname is Squirrel. So that's kind of where a little bit of the, you know, like crawl squirrel.
Squirrel is literally a way to reference the weasel without being called the weasel.
Right.
Because he does the little weasel. He does that a lot. So there's a throwback to that. There's literally throwbacks to the weasel persona.
Yes. Like very direct. He tried to distance himself from the weasel. And he is officially, by 1996, crawling back. So I feel like Budd is supposed to be a weed reference. Is there any stoners out there want to let me know, like, does Doyle have any significance in drug culture?
His name is Doyle Stubbs Johnson.
Okay, maybe Stubbs. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too hard about this.
Well, also McIntosh, like,
right.
The only thing I can think of is, like, the type of apple.
Right. Well, of course, this is another Razzie win. Pauly Shore co-won the Razzie Award for Worst Actor, tied with Tom Arnold for his performances in Big Bully, Carpool, and The Stupids. That was a real 96 was a real Tom Arnold renaissance. I remember the Stupids. Did you ever see that?
No. The only thing I know Tom Arnold from is Soul Plane, and when on that episode of, was it Phil Donahue, where they found the Peter Criss, the guy who was trying to say that he was Peter Criss and was homeless, and so Tom Arnold was, like, helping him out.
I completely forgot that Tom Arnold was, like, that memory was buried for me.
Yeah, I feel like there have been multiple people that it's like, yeah, they've been in all these things, but I know them from these two disparate and, like, obscure references. I've not seen too much Tom Arnold. I just know him from, I remember he was, like, the white guy on Soul Plane who had to take a shit. Because for some reason in black movies, there's always a white guy who has to take a shit.
Yeah, I guess, are we, I don't know. I'll ask Kia, I guess. I know that one of the stereotypes is that we smell like dogs. But I don't know. Are white people always having intestinal distress?
But then it's also confusing because then you have like a Friday where they took one comedic scene of Pops being on the toilet and made that his entire personality, where he's just constantly taking a shit, obsessed with taking shits and eating hot sauce burritos in the subsequent sequels. So like, it's confusing. Like, maybe it's just men of a certain age. I don't
maybe
know.
Yeah, maybe it's not, maybe it's not a race thing, I don't know. This is interesting. I previously said that Biodome grossed $13.4 million against an estimated production budget of $8.5 million. However, MGM spent $10 million on marketing, so I lied. This movie actually lost a pretty good amount of money.
Marketing for what?
I don't know. I will say, I remember this movie. So like 96, I was 12. And I feel like I remember seeing ads for this movie. So clearly the marketing budget was reaching 12-year-olds in mid-Michigan. It didn't work. I didn't see the movie until I was 40. But I was aware of its existence in 1996. Yeah, there's not really too many interesting, like, the reviews, believe it or not. I'm not seeing a lot of, like, really funny quotes or anything. I will say that the 1 out of 100 on Metacritic, it's one of only 11 films with this rating. Among the other, I don't recognize most of these titles, but the Garbage Pail Kids movie is one. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's something. I recently listened to a podcast where they talked about the Garbage Pail Kids movie. The podcast concept is they talk about horror media, and they talked about the Garbage Pail Kids movie not as a bad movie or a comedy, but as a work of abject horror. And that was
that's funny. And that was funny. I feel like I've heard of it. I haven't actually sat down to watch it, but it does sound familiar.
It's definitely in your Q zone. It's really grotesque and boring and surreal, and it has, like, they have basically little people in the Garbage Pail Kids costumes. And apparently, it's been a while since I listened to this podcast, so I'm probably mangling the story. But apparently, like, the costumes weren't very well ventilated and they couldn't see in them. So they had to just shoot. Well, they were basically blind and they had to, like, do it really quickly because it was hard to breathe in the costume. So they had to take them off. It just sounds like absolute hell.
Yeah, I mean, I do love Troll 2.
Yeah. It's definitely in that.
The other one I was thinking of? I was just thinking of something else that sounds very similar to that. So, yeah. Because at first I'm like, I don't, like, I've never really thought that the Garbage Pail Kids are cool or funny or anything.
It's no, I don't think thing. That's not a prerequisite for enjoying the movie. Yeah. In fact, in many ways, I think being a Garbage Pail Kids skeptic, I feel like if you were a Garbage Pail Kids fan, you'd probably be disappointed. But as a skeptic, you might actually find something more to value.
Anybody in animatronic costumes, that's definitely a plus for right. me. I do love, like, Jim Henson stuff.
Right, and this is like,
Jim Henson, but in hell.
Yeah, if Jim Henson had no budget and was also a complete insane person, that's kind of and also just, like, had no regard for human life because
he built these death traps. Oh, I remember what the other one was. Rock and Roll Nightmare is also kind of like that. Course. It's very long and boring. Yes. Kind of gross.
Endless scenes of John Michael Ford driving around in the Canadian wilderness.
I have seen... I've either seen them as like a meme or like something, but I'm looking at screenshots from this movie and I have seen something about this.
So real quick, we'll get into the movie in just 1 second, but real quick, I did want to look up. I was curious, morbidly curious to know who directed Biodome, and his name is Jason Blum. This is his second film as a director. His first film, was a movie from 1995 called Irving. And all I know about it, because I just opened up the IMDb page, there's very little information here. But there's five people in the cast. And one of those people in the cast is Jim Belushi. And he's credited, the character he's credited as playing is Gay Vampire Number Two. So that's all I know that about Irving. That
sounds like something I would be interested
in. Yeah, that's all I know, and that's all I need to know. That, and it has a 5.9 rating on IMDb compared to Biodome's 4.4. So apparently the superior film. So Biodome was his second movie. Then somehow after Biodome, he was still able to make a third movie. It was called Overnight Delivery, and it starred Reese Witherspoon and Paul Rudd. I have never heard anything about this. It's so funny how, like, I don't know, there's just so many movies get made and only some of them stand the test of time. And it's kind of fucking, like, say what you will about Biodome, we remember it, you know? I don't remember Overnight Delivery, but we remember Biodome. Then he did a couple of episodes of a TV series called Soldier of Fortune Incorporated, which I've also never heard of, although Dennis Rodman was in 17 episodes. So that's compelling.
Kind of, except you never know because there's a movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dennis Rodman.
Right.
And just like hearing that, you would think, okay, that shit is going to rule. Yeah. It's kind of boring.
Yeah. I think you told me that. And I think that might be why I've never seen it because I was like, well, if Callie didn't like it, I'm probably not going to like it.
Yeah. I bought two Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. It was Double Team and I don't remember what the other one is. I keep thinking Double Trouble, but that's the Barbarian Brothers. Whatever the one where there's two Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's got to be Double something, right?
Yeah, because I bought two Double movies.
Yeah, because it's almost always
and
Double.
One of them, Double Impact.
Double Impact.
Double Team and Double Impact. Double Impact is better.
Yeah.
That one rules.
That's one of my, honestly, that might be a future film series because movies where it, either they're twins or it's one guy playing two roles.
I also love twin movies. We could either do 12 Months of Twins. Actually, never mind. That's it. I was going to say we could do 12 Months of Van Damme. But honestly, 12 Months of Twins is so much better.
I like 12 Months of Twins because then we got twin dragons. That was my shit. I don't know, just something about...
I just recently watched that again.
Something about the just like inherent hijinks of having one actor play two different characters. And they're usually not very good actors. So the only way that they can play two different characters is by having them be polar opposites personality-wise. And they usually like one has a ponytail and one doesn't. It's one of my favorite genres of cinema.
Yeah, well, we have Twin Dragons. We have Double Impact, Twins.
There's the one with
any of the Barbarian
Brothers.
I
mean, we could honestly do like, you know, a solid 6 months of Barbarian Brothers. There's one with Antonio Banderas, right?
Ones? Yes. Yeah. But in that one, is he actually a twin or is he, he's trying to date twins and he, so he's pretending to be twins so he can date both. Is that what, I think that's what it
that
is.
That might be it.
I was just recently talking about this.
Yeah. All right. I guess that one's a little bit of a stretch.
No. It fits. It's technically a twins movie. Let me see what this is called. Too Much. So yes, he's in love with two sisters at the same time. And so in order to solve the problem, he decides to invent his own twin brother. I personally think that that counts.
And then we could end it with Multiplicity with Michael Keaton, where there's like 15 of them. But that's not twins, I guess. That's clones. All right. So we've stalled as long as we possibly could. Now it's time to talk about...
I mean, honestly, Biodome, in a way, Because basically, you just have two weasels in this movie. So
right.
it like, Stephen Baldwin is basically just another Pauly Shore.
Right.
It was a
what
way
is
of
their relationship
having another Pauly
with
Shore.
Each other? Because they seem
best
to have
friends
been raised
who are dating
together.
Other best friends. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Because there's all these flashbacks.
That's a good question.
Yeah, and so it's and they seem to have the same mom. I'm looking to see if Wikipedia explains this, and I don't think it does.
Best friends Bud Squirrel McIntosh and Doyle Stubbs Johnson live together in Arizona, but their environmentalist girlfriends Jen and Monique dump them due to their immaturity. I think they're just friends, and they've just been lifelong best friends who grew up together.
Yeah, so I guess maybe it was like one of their moms knows both of them. All right. Fine.
Yeah, and then their girlfriends are also best friends.
Right. There's a lot of unnecessary lore in this movie. When you consider how stupid this movie is, there are so many flashbacks and like scenes of them before this movie took place, scenes of them when they were children. This movie is both so not ambitious and yet weirdly does more than it needs to.
But I think there was a precedence for that, especially at the time, because all of those, there's like every Adam Sandler movie and every SNL sketch movie has a whole bunch of flashbacks like that. So I just think that's just kind of how comedies were in the mid-90s to mid-2000s,
pretty much. The cadence of the flashbacks, because it feels very non-sequitur, it feels like sort of proto-Family Guy, where it's like, we're just doing a flashback for no reason because it's a gag.
Yeah, which is what, I recently watched the Superstar movie. It was the same thing. It like starts off with a flashback to her as a little girl, and it's like, why? You never see that again. It's a gag
that
was manufactured specifically for a gag because it's funny to see these characters as kids, I guess. The same way that they'll do that, like, where are they now thing at the end.
Right. Yeah.
It's like kind of like the same genre.
It's the reverse of that.
Yeah.
Where were they then? Okay. So Bud and Doyle, we've talked before about idiot duo movies, which is another one of my favorites. And it's very astute to mention that there was sort of a de-evolution of the idiot duo. Like we start with Bill and Ted. Wayne and Garth are actually like kind of, you know, they're slackers, but they're actually kind of smart. And then somewhere between then and the early 2000s, when Dude, Where's My Car came out, the idiot duos became just like rock bottom moronic. And I haven't done a formal study of this, but I'm thinking that Biodome might have been the turning point. Like that was.
I really think it was. Because even, like, you look at, like, so the Barbarian Brothers are kind of fit both the twins and the idiot duo.
Right.
Like, stereotype. And, like, they would do stupid stuff, but, like, they were excellent cooks and twin sitters. They were, like, a really good cop and, like, jewel thief in Double Trouble. So it's, like, even though they're kind of dummies, like, they still are able to accomplish things. Whereas with Biodome, it's like they literally, I don't know what they even do for work.
Yeah, I'm struggling to describe them without using an ableist slur because they are truly
here's an example. Like a repeated gag that's in the movie is that for some reason, one of their hobbies is that they'll fart, like one or the other of them will fart and then they will discern what they've eaten based on the fart, which I guess is smart in a kind of way.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it could be used, but they don't use it. They don't use it for anything. It's not like they solve
what
the mystery.
Could you use that for?
They just, yeah. It's like a parlor trick.
What mystery could you solve with
that? It's just a parlor trick that they do to entertain each other.
Not even other people, literally just each other. They only really do it in private, right?
Yeah, I think so. Which makes it even weirder. It's like bordering on a fetish, right? Like, so there's one scene where Pauly is farting and Stephen Baldwin, where Bud is farting and Doyle is, you know, doing the fart sommelier thing and detecting what he ate. And then later in the movie, they reverse it so that Pauly gets to smell the farts. Just fascinated by these two men because, what is their job? They just like sit on the couch getting high all day. The movie opens with, I guess it's Earth Day, and their girlfriends. It is such a mystery how they met these women and, and why they're in these committed relationships with these women who are, you know, pretty normal. So their girlfriends are environmentalists and they want to volunteer for Earth Day. So to get out of volunteering, Bud has Doyle like stand on the other side of the room.
No, wait a second. They're making a decision of who should be the one that gets smacked in the head. And so they start by playing rock, paper, scissors to decide which one of them will throw the book at the other's
That's
head.
That's right, because this becomes plot important out by later. The book. Right, right.
Yeah. It's also important because it's like you kind of start out like you don't know what's happening. Because how would you be able to figure that out?
Yeah, it took me a minute. It's a little, the movie's a little bit of a puzzle. I will also say, most of these movies since the beginning, most of them I've watched like at least slightly buzzed. But for Biodome, I went out of my way to get pretty high before I watched it because I was like, I need to meet this movie where it is. You know, like I need to be on the right wavelength for this. So that was a further obstacle because my faculties were impaired and I was just like thrown. Like, I just remember the credits are very intense. There's like music playing and you know, like
it's actually kind of cool. It's like a very like it almost looks like a like something that you would see on Nickelodeon between commercials or whatever,
like a what are those called, bumper? I think they're called bumpers.
It really reminds me of like it's incredibly late 90s
kid
and teen collage.
I was thinking it was very like you know MTV alternative rock, but I actually
I think there is some overlap with that.
I think you're even more on the nose though, because it's really more like a it's like a Capri Sun commercial kind of aesthetic and tone and energy level. And I just remember like just trying to find my bearings with this movie, and I'm just like, this movie goes to fucking 10 right at the beginning, because they're playing rock paper scissors. I don't know why they're playing it, but they're playing it. And Stephen Baldwin loses because he always picks rock. And actually, if you notice, Bud waits for him to do rock, and like he pauses a little bit and then does paper, and Doyle never catches him. So Doyle loses. So he has to like go across the room and sprint at Bud, and Bud has like a big encyclopedia or something and just decks him with it. And this is all within the first 30 seconds of the movie. And it basically, it doesn't really slow down from there. It's pretty much like, this is the pace and this is the tone. And you know, this is just going to be 95 minutes of this pretty much. You know, you just gotta ride with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of gag montages in this. I feel like more so than in other Pauly Shore movies. This one was very gag montage heavy.
We talked about how Jury Duty did a lot of montages, but this
this is more.
There was literally, I remember there was a moment where one montage ended. I'm trying to remember what the song was. It might have been Safety Dance.
There's also a lot of music in this.
Yeah. It might have been the Safety Dance sequence. And then right after, you know what it was? This actually kind of pissed me off a little bit. So yeah, there is a lot of music. And at one point, it plays the song from the beginning of Dumb and Dumber. That kind of like dance hall-ish song. Boom Shakalak by Apache Indian. So that wasn't on the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack, but it's in the opening credits to Dumb and Dumber. And then they play it here. And I'm like, you can't do that. You can't just take another idiot duo movie's theme song and put it in the middle of yours.
A far
superior.
Better.
Yeah. Actually, I have to back up. And so I think the actual turning point for the idiot duo, like getting dumber, was Dumb and Dumber. And then Biodome is a post-Dumb and Dumber idiot duo movie. So let's give credit where it's due.
Except that there is a different tone, because obviously like Dumb and Dumber is Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey. and there was a little bit more like self-awareness.
Yeah.
I think after that, they all just went downhill and it's just.
Yeah. Biodome's attitude toward its main characters is very interesting because I feel like, you know, the whole premise of Dumb and Dumber, you're supposed to be smarter than them and you're supposed to go through the movie thinking these guys are idiots. You're not supposed to think they're smart, but I feel like, I don't know, it's almost like we're supposed to view them as peers because they become heroes.
Well, it's the same with Dude, Where's My Car, too. I think that's the difference. It's like, I feel like, as with a lot of things, it's like it starts and it makes sense why this was the joke. And then people who are either less confident in making that joke or who don't totally get it try to do the exact same joke and it just becomes a completely different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Bud wallops Doyle in the head with this encyclopedia and they almost get away with it because their girlfriends come over. Joey Adams plays Monique, Bud's girlfriend. She was in a bunch of,
she's in a bunch of Kevin Smith.
Yeah, Kevin Smith movies and stuff like that. Yeah. I didn't recognize the other Teresa Hill, I think is her name. She was in a couple of Puppet Master movies, I guess. her career is slightly less prestigious than Joey Adams. But so anyway, they play the two girlfriend, environmentalist girlfriends, and they like almost talk them out of it. And then one of them notices that there's an imprint of a globe on Stephen Baldwin's head. And so then they're like,
so dumb.
They're pissed off at them. So they leave and then they decide that they're going to make them jealous and tell them that they're at a party and they're meeting these other guys. And I don't know, in retrospect, it's sort of, I mean, I guess like at first I was confused why we were introducing this extra part of the plot, because I was thinking like, really the only reason why they end up at the Biodome is because they're driving aimlessly and Doyle has to piss and they think it's a mall. And so it's really like they can end up there for any reason. Like, I don't understand why we have this subterfuge with the girlfriends, but the only reason really is that I guess we're supposed to be rooting for them to get back together because, spoiler alert, they get back together with their girlfriends at the end. I don't know why these movies keep thinking we're invested in Pauly Shore's character's love life, because I have never been. But
they could literally not have the girlfriends or any of that part, because there is a part where I think they're like motivated when it's like a lot in between, but basically at the end they throw that party and it ends up ruining the Biodome.
Right.
And so there is a little bit of a reason that they kind of like shoehorn in where they want to not only fix the Biodome, but I think if I'm remembering correctly, they want to save their girlfriends from these like smart.
Oh yeah. The fake environmentalists
to try to sleep with them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But it's fucking stupid because they're fake environmentalists too.
I know. I was thinking about that. There's a really interesting moral to this story, which is that it's better to not even pretend to care, to like be truly, it's morally superior to be truly apathetic rather than pretend to care about issues. You know, like those guys are assholes, but these guys who don't even pretend to care about the environment, They're the real smart ones.
It's also like another spoiler is that none of the women in this movie have any sort of consequence. You could eliminate every single female character in the cast and it would have no consequence.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. And there's really no reason for anything to happen. One thing I love about this is that Bud and Doyle, they're pure agents of chaos. Like they just, their only motivation is to,
yeah, because even like they're in a desert, they could pee anywhere. I guess like the reasoning is that he apparently can't pee when there's people around, but like they're in a desert, they could have just driven off the side of the road and he could have peed. But the reason they stop at the Biodome is because he has to pee, so they think it's a mall, so they go in there, and then there are people there obviously because they're starting to, like, the scientists are starting to, whatever the experiment is, where they're going to be locked into the Biodome for a year. And so they can't open it up to them for Doyle to pee because it will ruin the biome.
Right.
So Polly, like, sets fire to a chip bag, and it, like, explodes. And I'm like, well, you didn't need to do all that.
Yeah.
It's a little full-on of a response for
that. Everything, everything they do. So him
doing that distracts everyone, and they're able to run into the biodome and pee. And that's how they get stuck in the biodome.
It's like completely the only thing motivating them. Well, okay, they are also, there's two women scientists, one of whom is played by Kylie, inexplicably played by Kylie Minogue, because she is completely incidental to the movie. They honestly could have saved their money. And the other one, the other one is named Denise Yvonne Douse. Oh, she was in Beverly Hills 90210. I would say 90% of her lines, if not 100% of her lines, are ADR.
Excuse me, miss. Are you tired?
I beg your pardon?
Are you tired?
No, why?
Because you've been running through my mind all day?
She seems like she's in a totally different movie. She delivers everything in a monotone that is clearly overdubbed. And I just, it's bizarre. But so anyway, so they're, if they have any motivation, it's to try and sleep with those two woman scientists. But even that feels just kind of like a side quest to them. Like, really what they want to do is just create turmoil everywhere that they go. there's one funny part. I actually did think this was funny. So, okay, I guess we should explain the premise of the biodome, because this is also, it's a solar punk film. So there's this, I think it's actually based on a real experiment. Oh, so it was actually filmed at a real, the University of Arizona Biosphere 2, which was the site of a real experiment. It says from 1991 to 1993, eight scientists were sealed in Biosphere 2 as part of a social experiment, which quickly descended into a fiasco due to interpersonal conflicts and scientific controversies. This true story was the subject of the 2020 documentary Spaceship Earth. I actually want to watch. This sounds like it might be interesting. So anyway, that was the inspiration for Biodome. And I guess the idea, I was a little confused by this because, again, I tried to get on the level of the movie, and that ended up being an impediment to my understanding. But I guess the idea is they want to create like a perfect self-sustaining system, right, where there's zero waste, I guess. Is that basically what the premise of the Biodome is? I mean, the good news is...
I was playing The Sims while I was watching.
The good news is you don't have to know, because it is completely, it's pointless. You don't need to really think about it any more than the most basic motivation. And even that, I don't know how far that'll get you. So, these scientists are doing this experiment. They're going to be locked away for a year to see how, to see if they can create this like environmental, this perfectly self-sustaining system. And so they've chosen eight different scientists from all these different disciplines. And then, and that is exactly when, like, as they're about to seal up the biodome, that's when Bud and Doyle show up. And like you said, they manage to sneak their way in. And so the part where everybody, the scientists are all standing there waving and you know, the press is there and stuff. And then all of a sudden, Bud and Doyle are standing behind the scientists also waving. Like, they just have, they're so fully at ease in every, it's like they, I guess they know they're not supposed to be there, but it's like it doesn't matter to, you know, it's not even like they're trying to break the rules. It's like they're indifferent to rules. They're beyond good and evil. They are purely creatures of id.
It's also important to note that Stephen Baldwin has that like 90s like white guy lock.
Yeah.
Hairstyle.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire movie, even in flashbacks, long before anyone would have had that hairstyle, like when he's a kid, he still has them. So if you could just imagine Pauly Shore and Stephen Baldwin with that hair.
So they finagle their way into this experiment. Initially, the guy, I guess he's the investor of the project, wants them removed. but the lead scientist says we can't do that because now the experiment, it would invalidate the experiment. I have bad news for Dr. Faulkner, the lead scientist. The experiment is already invalidated. Like, how science works, you can't just have two extra guys show up and now you carry on the experiment as planned. Like, already, it's fucking done, you know? But for some reason, they decide, instead of just, like, kicking them out and starting over, they decide to keep them there. And then it's just kind of a bunch of fucking hijinks. So I...
Like what you said, they just kind of do stuff. Like, there's one part... So, like, some of it kind of makes sense because you're like, okay, they're just goofing around. But there's one part where, like, the one dude is... What is he? He has, like, caterpillars or something. Oh,
butterflies,
that,
yeah.
Or, like... Yeah, he's raising these, like, rare butterflies, or they're supposed to be, like, some kind of self-sustaining butterfly something. And they listen to what he's saying.
May I help you?
What are these guys?
Well, they're two of the rarest Lepidoptera in the world.
Leopard, didn't their drummer lose an arm?
No. They're butterflies from the Brazilian rainforest.
So what are you trying to do, like, get them to start parking?
Actually, yes. In nature, the chances of these two finding each other, or porking, is very remote. We hope to breed thousands here.
Easy, Rambo.
And then they just start destroying everything in the room and killing all the butterflies. There's no reason for it. Like, even if it was something where... they're like a bull in the china shop and they like bend over and knock over all of the shells,
right,
and all the butterflies fall and die. Like, that would be one thing. It's not even that. They just like stand there and listen to him say what priceless things these are and that he's been working on these for however long, and then they're like, really? Okay. And they just start smashing everything. Like, they didn't even bother to give them a motive. They're like cats.
So that guy, the character's name is T.C. Romulus, and he's this sort of, you know, he's this like dorky scientist character. One of my favorite parts in the movie that actually made me genuinely laugh. It's one of the first nights that they're in the biodome and they're eating like this gross food, and Bud is like,
"This crap tastes like it came out of Romulus."
Maybe it did.
Which is not the flex that he thinks it is. Like, it's like, maybe you are eating my shit. Like, it's just such a weird exchange. So anyway, that the actor is Kevin West. And I was like, he looks so familiar to me. And I mean, he's been in a lot of different stuff. He was in Junior. He was in the Super Mario Brothers movie. You know, movies that everyone's seen. But here's specifically where I remember him is from the Totally Pauly episode we talked about a couple weeks ago.
He was his brother.
Yes. I was like, oh my God. So yeah, he's an entomologist, I guess. I think Kylie Minogue is a botanist or something.
Who cares?
Yeah.
She has a carrot at one point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She like kind of fillets the carrot. It's like the women are not only pointless in the movie, but they're very much, you know, they're 90s comedy women where like even these two accomplished scientists, but Kylie Minogue especially, is like this sex kitten scientist. It's a very strange role.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, she does fillet it and then like bites into the carrot.
Okay.
And that's supposed to be like he's flirting with her. And so she's, I don't know. I mean, you could just not do that. You could just not fillet a carrot.
Right.
Because the payoff isn't, I mean, it is a Bugs Bunny joke, I guess, but I don't feel like the payoff was worth it.
Right.
When you could just like not fillet the carrot.
Denise Dowse and Kylie Minogue, they only really exist as like figures of temptation, again, because they want us to care about Bud and Doyle's relationship with their girlfriends. And so I guess you're supposed to be like, no, Bud and Doyle, don't make out with the hot scientists, in a part where they have the opportunity to make out with the hot scientists. And but it's really
I just
like
feel bad for the hot scientist.
I feel bad for every woman
they
in this movie.
They could all do better.
These are apparently their best options. Are these two guys like that? It's a that's the tragedy here. I wanted them to just dump them at the beginning and never be seen again. But yeah, that's I guess that's not it shouldn't be our takeaway. I guess. So I think the final straw is they get locked in their room, right? And they find a way out. They go through the vents.
Yeah, and then there's the hilarious montage where they've been eating that disgusting food and then they find, like, Doritos or whatever in the box, and that's...
Which I was confused by
that.
They
put that, like, laughing gas on.
Yeah, I was confused by the junk food.
Why the fuck is it there?
Why was it there? Yeah, I thought that that would be, like, a plot thing. I kept waiting to see, like...
Was it maybe implied that the one, like, scientist who's doing the whole bot, maybe it was, like, his stash or something?
Maybe.
Or am I just reading way too far?
I don't know. I thought that that would be, like, a reveal. Like, oh, who's hiding junk food here? Again, I keep...
Nope.
I keep approaching this as a mystery. And it's really not. There's no... There's no subtext. It's just stuff happening.
Yeah, I can't remember. I do know that they get, like, kicked out to where they don't have any water or food or anything, but I think they're still technically in the biodome. And then they're starving and thirsty, and then they find a window that has the key in it, and so they're able to get out.
Right.
And then they're going to eat that lizard.
Right.
And then... something happens? Like,
yeah.
I don't remember.
Well,
again,
first,
I was playing The Sims.
First, there's the whole junk food. They find the stash of junk food, and they also find tanks of nitrous oxide. Again, don't know why it's there other than to have a scene where they're, like, inhaling the nitrous, and that's where Bud says he's a duck-billed platypus, which is a random callback to Jury Duty we discovered. I don't... Maybe it's... Is it a callback to something else? It, like, was the Jury Duty one a reference? I don't know. And then, yeah, then they get, I think after the laughing gas incident, they get banished into the desert part of the biodome. And that's when they find the exit. And
okay,
at that point, I was kind of like, is the movie over? Because now they can just leave. But this is like, this is where the girlfriends get important again. Because they find out, they order pizza after they think about eating the lizard. They order pizza, then they find out that their girlfriends are going to this party with other men. So then they decide to throw a party at the biodome. And that, you know, we talked about this before, it destroys the bio, like the ecosystem's totally fucked. And then all of a sudden, the movie, it becomes like, this is why I said it's a solar punk movie, because now it has this environmental message, because it's like, well, it's a metaphor for society. They destroyed the biodome with their, you know, stupid partying, and now they have to set things right. So I guess just to, like, to get their girlfriends back, the scientists are ready to give up, and they're like, no, we can't give up. We have to fix this. We can still restore the biodome. So Doyle eats the key to the back door and, like,
I forgot, because I knew he ate the key, because there is a hilarious gag later where one of the scientists outside, like, asks for the key, and so he presses his ass
right
against the window.
Yeah, we don't see Pauly's really ass in this, but we do, however, see Stephen Baldwin's ass, and it's a pretty long shot. Stephen Baldwin's ass gets a good amount of screen time in this movie.
Yeah, it's like pressed against a window too.
I guess this is a good time to bring this up. You know, we were disappointed in Andy Dick's performance in the Army Now. It felt like he was phoning it in. Say what you will about Stephen Baldwin. And I know, I know he's not a good actor, and I know he's not a good guy. But one thing I have to take my hat off to Stephen Baldwin, because he fucking leaves it all on the field in this movie. There is not a single scene in which he doesn't absolutely go for broke. From that opening scene where he's getting bashed with the encyclopedia, like, he's fully invested in this character. It's kind of a great performance.
I agree with that. I think he embodies the character, I think, as well as, like, Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels embody the characters in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Almost more convincingly.
Right, because he's probably dumber than Jim Carrey or Jeff Daniels, so yeah. it's yeah. like not as much of a stretch. There's a
little bit of method acting. Yeah.
and I would even, you know, so it's an interesting contrast because Stephen Baldwin is really like, he's acting his ass off in this movie. I mean, it's a stupid role, but he's going for it. But Pauly Shore is more like, it's the same kind of thing that we talked about in the Army Now, where it feels like he's kind of like, it reminds me a little bit of, did you see Madam Web by any chance?
No.
I love Dakota Johnson in Madam Web and also in the 50 Shades trilogy, because it's hard to describe the pitch that she's at. It's not so much that she's like making fun of the movie or that she thinks she's above the movie or whatever. Like, she's playing the character. She's not like constantly, you know, winking at the camera, but it's like, you can also, it's very obvious that she does not give a shit. And so it adds this level of distance from the film. And Pauly's doing a little bit of a Dakota Johnson performance in both In the Army Now and Biodome. Like, there's a lot of parts where he starts cracking up and it feels genuine. And I don't know if it's just because, like, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if all of his and Stephen Baldwin's scenes were varying degrees of improvised, because it's not like the dialogue is great or anything makes sense. But it, like, it feels like he's genuinely cracking himself up. So it's like you have this interesting, Pauly's just sort of coasting through the movie and, you know, going along with the ride. And then Stephen Baldwin is absolutely 100% invested. Both approaches are very effective, and I think they play off each other well.
Yeah, and I think that they fit with the characters also, because like you mentioned, like Bud is always winning Doyle with rock, paper, scissors by basically cheating, and Doyle just never notices it. So it does kind of fit with the characters. Also, like, every time I watch this movie, I remember that Hailey Bieber is Stephen
Baldwin's daughter. Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I don't have anything else to say about that. But
born November 22nd, 1996. So
wow.
Around the time that Hailey Bieber was born, Stephen Baldwin was acting in Biodome.
Yeah, she
that's crazy.
May have been conceived around the time that this movie was shot.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like the first half of the movie is them just causing completely unmotivated chaos, eventually getting kicked out and escaping the Biodome. The second half of the movie, they develop a conscience of some kind and sort of like they become the driving force of building it back together. And it's sort of like they're these heroes, you know, and like the people, the media and the people are still outside the Biodome and now they're cheering them on. And it becomes this weirdly helpful movie.
Yeah. And it's interesting watching this after Jury Duty, because Jury Duty also had kind of like an environmentalist like message to it.
Right. Right. But in Jury Duty, the environmentalists were the bad guys. And I mean, in this one, it's like, yeah. You know, there are those guys that are trying to get with their girlfriends and, you know, trying to do that by being like righteous progressive dudes. But what I will say is that those guys do exist. Like there absolutely are guys who like try to be woke or whatever. And it's really just a way to get with women. Like it is it's an actual thing. So it doesn't feel like the message is anti-environmentalist. It feels, you know, it's like anti stolen valor, I guess. and the real environmentalists are Bud and Doyle, of course.
Yeah.
So they're doing all these things, like they're making an air filter, and Doyle is trying to do it by putting a bunch of cigarette butts in a container.
I wish that all of this worked. Like, I just wish that all, I don't, that's the end of the thought. I just wish that this right. worked. I wish Biodome was real.
Yeah, yeah. What if this was our way out of the climate crisis? What if we just Bud and Doyled our way out of it, you know?
I mean, at this point, it's worth a shot.
Right, right. None.
I think it does put a little bit too much of the onus on the individual and less on the, you know, corporations, which are the majority of the problem.
Right.
But, you know, what if we could just string enough cigarette butts together to compete with it?
And then, so in this last third of the movie, then we get this this bizarre subplot where Dr. Faulkner, who we haven't talked about that much, he's played by William Atherton, who's, you know, like a character actor. He was the EPA agent in Ghostbusters, Walter Peck. He always just plays kind of like dickheads, you know, authority figures. And in this movie, he has this ridiculous mullet, and he's the lead scientist of the Biodome experiment. And at some point, I think it's around the time that they escape. It's the night of the party. Dr. Faulkner disappears. And so that becomes this whole side plot. And I was approaching this movie as a mystery for some reason, I guess, because my brain needed something else to like do with the well, input.
Like, it kind of, I mean, one, we watched Jury Duty, right, and that was set up like a mystery. Right. Two, I mean, this does have a lot. It's like it could easily have been a mystery with just a little bit more thought.
Right, right. Because, yeah, like I felt like something was up. Something was weird about Dr. Faulkner. Something was weird about the investor guy. I was like, is this a scam or something? Like, are they allowing Budd and Doyle into the system because it will, you know, I don't know. Is it like insurance fraud? Like, I don't know. You know, and then there was the hidden stash of junk food. So I was kind of like expecting all of these things to come. I don't know why I was expecting this in Biodome, but I was kind of expecting all of these threads to be, you know, to come together. It's
like glass onion, yeah. But with 0 point.
But what ends up happening is Dr. Faulkner just kind of fucks off at the party, and then he's hiding. He has like a secret part of the biodome where he's hiding in, and he's building bombs because he's gone crazy. Again, fully unmotivated.
I didn't even realize that that's what was happening.
Oh, yeah. He's building bombs out of coconuts. I don't know how. He's like injecting some kind of chemical into the coconut that is somehow making them explosive.
Because the coconut blows up. Okay, so it's interesting that you mentioned that you were really high when you watched this movie, because I was stone cold sober. Granted, so I've seen it twice, and I like somehow just like did not put that together in my brain. I'm just like watching it, letting it wash over me, almost as if like how Doyle would watch, right, this movie, where it's like you're just letting it happen,
right,
to you,
right,
and not questioning.
Yeah, I don't
anything.
Think Budd and Doyle would ask any questions. It's like in that scene with the butterflies; they would calmly wait for the exposition to end and then immediately start causing chaos. So basically, they're doing all this stuff to repair the biodome, the ecosystem. They're almost there. And then they find Dr. Faulkner, and he has them go around and place the coconuts all over the place. And because they're idiots, they don't ask any questions about why. So they do that. And then they accidentally fumble one and it blows up. And that's when they realize they're bombs. And Dr. Faulkner has the detonator. So they're like trying to fight him for the detonator. They get it back. And then there's like this weird moment of suspense where it seems like it's like a horror movie. Suddenly it seems like Dr. Faulkner has been overpowered, but then he comes running out with one more coconut and he throws it. Oh, I forgot. This is important. Well, it's not important. None of this is important, but there's a part where to convince him to put the detonator down, Stephen Ball and Doyle is like,
Rochambeau for the dome, Doc? You feel lucky?
Well, yeah. I think I do.
On three. One, two, three.
Paper?
You know, the whole movie, he has only ever thrown rock. And then this one time he does paper and he loses. I didn't think that was kind of, it makes no fucking sense. But it was at least like a, you know, it shows they're trying. It was a callback to something that happened previously in the movie.
Yeah. It was some level of continuity,
right,
and consequence and like purpose for something.
Yeah. So he throws this coconut and then, oh, he trips. And then it flies over their heads and it blows up.
Well, there is an explosion, and everyone thinks that they're dead, and then they all run out of the
That's right. There's this weird moment of suspense. So, yeah. Often, I guess the last just general observation I have to make about this movie is, you know, a lot of movies have very inconsistent tones from scene to scene. Like, we talked about it with In the Army Now. It's this goofy, lighthearted comedy, and then there's just a scene where Pauly Shore kills a bunch of people, and we're just supposed to, you know, not have any cognitive dissonance with that. But Biodome is a movie where I often found myself confused by the tone within a single scene, because there would be like I mentioned before, the character that Denise Dowse plays, you know, she's like constantly flatly delivering exposition. It seems like she's in a drama. There'll be scenes where, you know, there's music playing that just doesn't really like fit the mood. Or like things get really serious. It's hard to explain, but it's even from moment to moment, it's like, what is the tone?
It also, like, the environmentalist tone seems to be really serious, but it's not really treated with any kind of like care.
Oh yeah.
Which I feel like it could be like, I feel like they're trying to get you to take it seriously and consider the environment seriously.
Right.
But they don't give you anything to work with.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to do that when, like, the science of the biodome doesn't really make sense. I mean, it's also hard to do that when we forgot to mention that when they sneak in to use the bathroom, they go to a waterfall and Doyle just, like, pisses in the waterfall. So right away, they're destroying the ecosystem, like, blatantly.
And I guess, like, I think that the point is supposed to be that they're kind of apathetic, and then by the end, they end up caring and becoming like environmentalists, and they care about what they're doing and are really motivated by it. But it's just like not, you don't really get
that. Yeah, they didn't really sell it, you know, because it really just seems like they're trying to get their girlfriends back.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it would be more effective and frankly less offensive if they just removed any women. Like, I would rather just there be no women on screen, because if the alternative to like having representation, like if my only option for there to be representation is just women filleting a carrot and having absolutely no consequence to the plot, I would rather there just not be any woman on screen. And I think it would make the story stronger too.
There's a whole subplot. Do you remember with the girlfriends?
The stepdad,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't even understand that part, but it's like one of their stepdads was in some kind of accident, so he has to use diapers, and he drinks beer all the time. I don't know if maybe it's like he creates a lot of waste. I don't know, it's very strange.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, again, with absolutely no consequence. Like, does anything come of that?
Not really. I mean, I think he's the one who delivers the pizzas, and he's also the one that tells them.
But that could have been anyone.
I know. The actor is Taylor. I'm not sure how to say it. Taylor Negron. He was completely incidental to the movie, but he was also possibly my favorite character because I loved his delivery of certain lines.
Mom, would you please tell your love slave that if he's not part of the solution, he's part of the problem?
The only problem I have is that I've run out of Depends.
You know, Russell, there is a bathroom right around the corner.
I cannot go to the bathroom. I hurt my bladder rollerblading.
It's almost like it's too funny for this movie. It feels like it's in a different kind of comedy, like a more absurdist kind of alternative comedy. And, you know, it's moments like that.
Which I think is why I like this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it interests me more because I never watched Dude, Where's My Car as a kid, even though I remember it being like around, because I was at that age where it's like, I was definitely too young to watch Dude, Where's My Car and like American Pie and stuff, but kids my age still would watch it.
Right.
Their parents didn't love them as much as I guess. And so, like, I was aware of them, but I never watched them. And so I recently, like, I'm like, well, I'm 32. I might as well see what these are about. So I watched Dude, Where's My Car recently because I think it was on Tubi, because I'm like, I'm not paying for that. And it just, like, in many ways, it has a lot of the same themes and, like, characters as Biodome. Mm. But Biodome is just, to me, so much more interesting of a film.
Yeah. There's something about it.
And I think it is because it's just so absurd. And, like, the music is good in it, too. Like, there's a Faith No More song in it, and, like, There is some of that, like, well, we just need to pack as many songs into this as possible. Put the safety dance
right
in. So there's, like, a little bit of that.
Right.
But for the most part, the soundtrack is more interesting, and it's just, like, more bizarre. It has that cool, like, 90s collage feel to it. Mm. Almost, like, really, like, high-res colors that just remind... It looks very 1996.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, more interesting.
Yeah, there's a... In the party, there's a band playing. I don't think it's, like, a... I didn't recognize the band, but they're playing a cover of He's a Horror by Cheap Trick, which is fucking cool. Like, that's a cool yeah. little touch.
Oh, and Tenacious D is in
yes,
this.
Yeah. I forgot
time
to mention
that. Tenacious
that.
D was ever in a movie.
Yeah, and they don't show them at first. It was at a rally that they're, or like a, you know, college environmental party. Maybe this is a thing that happened. I was 12 in 1996, but... If this movie is any indication, the 90s was just rife with environmental-themed parties. but there's one going on, and Kia was like, is that Jack Black singing? And I was like, that does sound a lot like him. And then it cut to them, and it was like, oh, that's literally Tenacious D.
Yeah.
It's fun. I'm sorry. I liked Biodome. What can I say? I'm not saying it's, you know, a masterpiece, but in a weird way, it sort of also is.
Yeah, I laughed out loud the first time I watched it, and it was one of the things that made me really want to do this. And then I still laughed out loud at the same stuff the second yeah. time I watched it, and I wasn't even paying as deep attention. So,
yeah, I guess the only other thing that sticks out to me that we did kind of touch on it. One of the flashbacks, Bud is dressed like the weasel and doing a weasel impression.
What's up, buddy? Cause I'm the whistle.
Okay, my turn.
So I guess this brings us back to the unified Pauly Shoreverse theory. Does that mean that Bud is imitating the character of the weasel that he watched on Totally Pauly on MTV? Is Pauly Shore a person in the Biodome universe? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that this was a different version of the weasel where he's the squirrel in this situation, but he's similar to the weasel. But yeah, as a teenager, he was like weasel squirrel, and now he's a different version. But I don't think the Pauly Shore exists in this universe.
Yeah.
But also, why the fuck was Doyle a punk?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They never explained that.
They both had to be part of some subculture.
Yeah, they never explained that.
It was like it reminded me of The Herbs, where it's like you just are so invested in.
Yeah.
Just niche. I've been mentioning The Sims a lot in this episode. It's just like a niche Sims spinoff reference.
Right. Yeah, but it'd be like you go to different parts of town, and each part of town is like, this is the industrial yeah. neighborhood. So you just like buy
yeah,
Doc
Martens.
Yeah, the
motive is you're basically a culture vulture.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you have right. to. Like, the
yeah,
whole point of the game is to
simulator.
Rise up on the social ladder. Yeah, and the Black Eyed Peas are
yeah,
also
right.
It.
And but, the whole purpose is to impress the Black Eyed Peas. Which, you know...
And like Biodome.
Yeah.
And like Biodome, it was critically panned, but it's one of
right.
my favorite games.
I have one last thing to say, which is the very last section of Wikipedia is potential sequel. This is another one of those movies where we keep getting threatened with a sequel.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention that. I was reading that right before we started filming.
Yeah. This one I hear more. So, I mean, Pauly talks about making sequels to all of his movies. But this one I feel like I hear about more because Stephen Baldwin is very invested in this Biodome sequel. So it says on December 18, 2013, Stephen Baldwin appeared on Mancow Muller's radio TV show confirming that he's in talks with Pauly Shore about making a sequel to the film revolving around the children of their characters, Bud and Doyle. Baldwin had also stated that he gets recognized more for his role in Biodome than any other film he has done thus far. In an interview published in Variety
oh my God.
On January 17th, 2017, he reiterated his desire to make a sequel, saying that Shore was interested and he has funding, but is seeking studio approval. So that was 2017. I don't know where we stand now. I think, honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think the time is ripe for a Biodome sequel because, like we've talked about, the urgency of environmental action is stronger than ever. So this could be a more politically motivated film than the first one is. Now, if it's being funded by Stephen Baldwin, I don't think it will, because I have my doubts that Stephen Baldwin believes in climate change, but it could.
How crazy would that be, though, a biodome that has the same environmental undertones, but also denies climate change?
Yeah, I'm not against the idea. In fact, I think I mentioned off camera or off mic once, maybe for a future minisode, we can talk about pitching sequels to these various movies, because I have a few ideas for them. I think our next first, do you have any final thoughts about Biodome?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've...
It's on Tubi. Go watch it. It's free.
Oh, is it on Tubi? So
Yeah, I watched it on Tubi.
Oh, man. I was hoping it was... So first I tried to pirate it, like I did Jury Duty, and that, like, I couldn't get the file to... It was very easy to pirate, you know. People are out there sharing Biodome. but I couldn't get the file to play on our Plex server. So then... I looked it up on the website Just Watch, and it was only in these, it was on like Hoopla and Fubo, like all of these fucking made up sounding.
So Hoopla is through the library, so that would have been free too. So Hoopla, if I'm remembering correctly, Hoopla, you can download digital books and also movies.
Oh, okay.
So I've used Hoopla from the library to download
and that's
books.
Why I, like, that's why I couldn't e-books. Find the app on my TV. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe it's free with ads on YouTube, like I found out Jury
Which
Duty was.
Jury Duty is, because yeah. That's how I found Jury Duty.
And I found it on YouTube, but it was on MGM Plus on YouTube. So what I did was I signed up for a 1 week free trial to MGM Plus on YouTube, and that's how I watched the movie. I can't believe I could have just watched
that's also
Tubi.
Valid, because now you have MGM Plus for
a That's week true. For and, you know,
potentially
I will
reasons.
Say, for those of you, if you're like our buddy Lee that we did our last episode about, and you're jumping in the middle of it, Encino Man is also on MGM Plus, because after Biodome ended, it rolled straight into Encino Man, and we definitely watched the first 20 minutes of that also. So at least two of the movies we're watching is on MGM Plus. But Tubi is honestly an even better home for Biodome. Honestly, Tubi should put up the money for Biodome too, and they should just make it a Tubi original.
Oh my
Can
God.
Can you imagine?
That would be amazing. I wish.
Oh, and I did also want to say one more thing. Just we're recording this the night after the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And I realized as I was sitting down to watch Biodome that I was choosing to watch Biodome instead of the presidential debate. And I don't regret that choice. I will say, I think I ultimately made the right decision.
You can always catch the highlights.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I think our next minisode is going to be, Callie had the brilliant idea of doing a Halloween themed minisode, because there are some. We'll spend the next couple of weeks compiling a playlist of Totally Polly episodes to watch, because there's at least two that we know of that are Halloween themed, and I'm sure there's more.
I think there's it's probably the same episode for these two, but I know of at least three Totally Polly clips, because there's one where he's finding a costume, and then there's one where he's trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And then today I found one where he's at the pumpkin
patch. Okay, yeah, so that'll be fun. I always love talking about Totally Polly. And then, honestly, after that, I kind of have to think about it, because I think the next, like, movie might be... Is it Polly Shore? Yeah, it's Polly Shore is Dead. We've got, like, a seven-year jump from Biodome to Polly Shore is Dead in 2003. But I want to see if we can find some episodes of the extremely ill, like the actual thing that ended Polly Shore's career, which was the canceled sitcom from 1997, Polly. So let's see what we can do. We might be going to Polly Shore is Dead. We might be going to Polly. Either way, we've got the Halloween minisode as a buffer. So that'll be the next thing you see from us in October. Oh, and it might be a little more than 2 weeks because I'm going to be in the UK for the first couple weeks of October. So it might be hitting like right around Halloween. So there might be a little bit of a, I don't know. We haven't been that consistent about every 2 weeks, but it's like ish. That's fine.
I think as long as we are moving or we are watching a movie a month, that yeah. is the We're best
I mean, this is the most consistent we've ever been. So I'm not going to get that hung up on. Yeah. So yeah, in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram at Dystopian Graham. You can follow us on YouTube at Dystopian Dance Party, on the web, dystopiandanceparty.com. You can email us, heybuddy@dystopiandanceparty.com. And yeah, review our podcast. Right now, as of this recording, we have one review. It's from Pauly Shore. And the title is Hey Buddy. And the review is Cool Show Dudes. And that was definitely Pauly Shore who wrote that and not one of us. So if you want to join Pauly Shore in giving us a 5-star review, welcome to do so. And that's it. We'll see you later. Bye.
All hell is breaking loose.
Which one's Tito?